Hi, and welcome to Nintendo World Report Connectivity, episode 298. Ah, crap. We have like 2 weeks to plan 300, don't we?
We should probably come up with some sort of an idea of some sort. Or you guys could just write in like a lot of listener mail, and then we wouldn't have to worry about making a plan.
Well, hi, I'm Neil Ronahan. Welcome to Connectivity. And joining me, as always, except for last week when we both weren't around, is John Raritan.
Last week was a nice week of both you and I just waking up in the morning and going, I don't really wanna today. And then Alex was like, I'll do it.
Yeah, for me, it was like I had like a sore throat that developed into a little bit of a cold. And like Wednesday is when we record, and that was the peak of it. So it's just that like, well, if we do this, we're going to need a guest or something, because like I'm not going to be able to handle the full workload of co-hosting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just had a lot of stuff come up at work and didn't really have the brain space for it. But we're back.
Yeah, it worked out. It was a good episode talking about Mario Party.
It was actually nice. I got to listen to it, and it's always nice to have an episode of the show where I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And one real quick. I do need to correct that Matt at one point said that all I thought CRT filters were a PNG image of lines over a game. To clarify, that is not what I think all CRT filters are, merely what the NSO CRT filter is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a good clarification. I will say that Mario Party game, it's actually really good.
It seems great. Yeah, I had no interest in it, but listening to that episode, I'm kind of keep an eye out for a used copy because I'm very interested now.
Yeah. I mean, I guess before we get to the meat of the show, which we're going to talk about the year 2003, get hyped.
Obviously.
But I guess before we get to there, I've been playing some Mario Party Superstars. Not that I'm not at like the Xander and Matt level of being like really invested in Mario Party, but it's a series that I've played most of the games of over the years. Some of them have sat better with me than others. I think my only contrarian take is that I think Mario Party 9 on Wii is really fun. That seems to be the one that I think people like think that's like how it got really bad. But
is that one?
Yeah.
Or is that,
but that's, okay. It's the second one on Wii.
Yes. 8 was the one that was also on GameCube, right?
I mean, 8 was basically a GameCube game with jerk-off motions.
Okay. Yeah, 8 was
the one that was... It was not also on GameCube, but it was essentially a GameCube game where they're just like, instead of using a control stick, you will just masturbate.
I want to say it didn't have widescreen support.
It probably didn't.
And that was that's my weird piece of knowledge about 8 that could be wrong.
The only thing that I can say good about 8 is that it came out when I was in college, and it was ripe for a drinking game. That's the only good thing I could say about Mario Party 8.
I actually probably played more of 8 than most Mario Parties, because it was the one that my girlfriend at the time, little sister, had, and so I played a ton of it with her.
Yeah, yeah. I hope you didn't do a drinking game with her.
Yeah, come here, 4-year-old. Let's get wasted and play Mario Party.
Yeah, the GameCube ones I actually revisited more later. Like, I definitely played those, and it was actually a buddy of mine who now lives in Germany. When he was moving over to Germany, he was just at like, take all my GameCube games. And I'm like, all right, man. He's like, what do you want me to do with them? He's like, well, I'm going to Germany. I don't need them. Like, I guess like when I come back, like we hang out and we play video games, and it's worked out pretty well. We've played some of those Mario Party games when he's come back. But that was like, I never really owned the Mario Party games on GameCube until, my friend moved to another country and just gave them to me. But I played a lot of the N64 ones. And largely, like, kind of, enjoyed the series, hoped it would be better. And Superstars actually seems like it's better. And it does that a lot by embracing the past. I want to say like it's slavish, but it's also not in how it references older games. I mean, all the mini games and the boards come from past games. Although it's nice to see the mini games not just be like from the N64 era, like the boards are. The mini games, ones from Mario Party 10. Although weirdly, they don't count Super Mario Party as a real Mario Party game. It's only the numbered ones matter.
Did the minigames wind up being the same ones from Top 100?
I don't know.
Okay.
I never played Top 100.
So I remember that being like, I remember them saying there were 100 mini games, and that was kind of the working theory was that it might be the same list, but I don't know if that ever actually,
I mean, there's definitely some crossover there. Cause you the bumper balls, classic, stone cold classic.
Yeah.
And the mini games are fun. Like some of them are better than others. I've played it largely, I guess, in unorthodox co-op, which is me and my toddler pick a character and play against three computers. And that's been very fun.
Yeah.
And it's very simple and easy to just hop into a board. It saves you progress when you quit out. I haven't played online yet, but hope to do that at some point. I watched some of our Mario Party monthly stream from last week, and that looked like it was fun. Looked like a good time. And yeah, the boards are like, they picked good boards from the N64 games, and I really do hope they kind of build on it. I think there was some data mining that found out that there's going to be some added content, whether it's paid or free. I have no idea.
Maybe I'll get honestly. It for free with my Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
That would
please
be
continue
cool.
Make that a regular thing, Nintendo.
Yeah,
like that would actually make that product like have like some real value if DLC being on it was a regular thing.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I have my expansion pack and everything. Have not touched the Animal Crossing DLC yet. Did you?
I personally haven't, but my wife has been playing it pretty much nonstop, and that's she good. Seems to love it. Though, I mean, she also already liked, I know there's different opinions on New Horizons. She is very pro New Horizons, but really likes the DLC.
I've been waiting for my wife to get back into it because that was a big part of the reason why I wound up playing New Horizons.
Yeah.
I mean, like that came out in March, and I played it pretty consistently, like probably July or August is maybe when I tapered off. And even then, like I still would pick it up. Like it was basically like, I think, I did turn it on at some point, and it was just that, like, oh, it was just Halloween was the last time I played. There are pumpkins everywhere. Huh? Well, I don't feel like cleaning this up right now. But like, so I mean, it was the longest period of time that I ever played an Animal Crossing game, but I think a lot of that was due to it being 2020 and COVID.
Yeah, it was the perfect time for it.
Yeah. It was also helpful that, like, you know, my wife got really into it, and I had friends that got really into it, but at least in my circle, people haven't gotten bit by the DLC yet. I'll hop in at some point. I mean, by the time I get there, then it'll be like, this is how you get all the gyroids, because that is how I measure completing an Animal Crossing game.
There are some good, weird, hilarious gyroids in there. So
I've been shown
a few of them, and they are delightful and strange and funny.
Yeah. Yeah, like maybe, I mean, probably there's like a Thanksgiving holiday in there. Maybe I'll pick it up before that, so that way I can kind of romp through the holidays that I kind of missed out on because I petered out around Halloween last year.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get to the topic du jour, which first we're going to do a bit of listener mail that we got, and then we're going to talk about Knights of the Old Republic and Grand Theft Auto, two late breaking games that are cutting edge, great technology using touch screens and gizmo gadgets.
Well, one of them uses touch screens.
Yeah. Yeah. KOTOR does not.
I don't think so. Screens.
And then we're going to talk about just holiday 2003 in video games, since Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City. You know, no disrespect to San Andreas, it just doesn't fit the bit. But they're all coming to Switch this week. Knights of the Old Republic also coming to Switch this week. And, you know, just two games that were emblematic of an era. I mean, definitely Grand Theft Auto 3, like, in a way, like, redefined video games, honestly, at that point in time. Knights of the Old Republic, less so. I just think Knights of the Old Republic's a real good game.
I like Knights of the Old Republic more than Grand Theft Auto 3, looking back on it.
I mean, that's where I'm at, too. So. But I also, I mean, I really like Star Wars. That was kind of my gateway into some of those BioWare RPGs.
Yeah.
It kind of got me to learn more of how, like, the mechanics of, I mean, honestly, D&D. Like, that was not necessarily my entry point, but definitely a way of how I learned it more.
Yeah.
But first, let's go to the listener mail from Chariot Goblin. Thank you so much for writing in. If you want to write in, you can write in by emailing us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, or you can bother us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. We do check that, so hit us up there. give us your thoughts, questions, what have you. Do you even know that we had almost 300 episodes? Because we're almost there. But Cherry Goblin says, it's been over 2 years since the Pokemon Company announced that Detective Pikachu would be coming to Switch in some form. As we approach the release of the long-awaited Shin Megami Tensei 5, I have to ask, do we think Detective Pikachu for Switch is canceled?
So I have the inside scoop on this. In order to get Detective Pikachu on your Switch, all you have to do is subscribe to HBO Max via your Hulu subscription. And then you can access HBO content through the Hulu app. And I believe HBO still has Detective Pikachu on there. So that's how you can watch it on your Switch. Next question.
At some point during 2020, I think I like watched the first half an hour of Detective Pikachu and fell asleep.
Have you seen it before?
I saw it in theaters. Remember theaters? Those were fun.
I went to a theater.
Did you?
I went to Jungle Cruise in a theater in kind of the, like, we were both vaccinated. It was like a random weekday night. We knew it wouldn't be busy. And the theater we were going to was one of those ones where you like have reserved seating.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems to be, at least in my area, every place is doing reserved seating now.
Yeah. So like we could even see that, like, we're like, there's nobody else at this movie. Yeah. Let's just go. Cause no plague will stop me from watching Dwayne The Rock Johnson in khakis, apparently, is what I have learned about myself. It was an okay movie. Detective Pikachu was better.
Yeah. I didn't mean it as a slight against Detective Pikachu. I think the movie's totally fine. It's like weird that like that's the direction that they went for a big Pokemon live action movie. It was a fun movie. I was just tired. That was all. I was like, all right, I want to put some. It was like peak pandemic anxiety, stress, and I was just like, all right, let's just put something kind of nice that I can just fall asleep to.
Yeah.
But as far as Detective for the Pikachu, actual the question, game, yeah. as for the question, no, I don't think Detective Pikachu is canceled. For I mean, just looking at how the Pokemon Company has announced games over the years, even Detective Pikachu itself on like the 3DS one was like this long gestating thing that people didn't know exactly what it was. And then like half of it came out in Japan, and then it took a while before the rest of it came out on 3DS worldwide. I think that Detective Pikachu on Switch is perhaps delayed because of the pandemic. I would not be surprised if it could be a 2022 game, could be a 2023 game. It might have always been maybe like a 2022 game. Because if memory does serve me right, but I think this was announced in 2019 at like a Pokemon Presents then, and it was right around when the movie came out. I think there might have been expectations that the movie was going to do better than it did.
I thought the movie did exceedingly well.
Well, here's what happened with Detective Pikachu. It came out like 2 weeks before Endgame.
Oh, okay.
So like I think it had an okay opening weekend, but the tail for it was just like it was chopped off.
That's too bad.
Because I know there was some stuff where like they were going to do a sequel, and I think there was like there's a movie and maybe a TV show in the works, and like I don't think it's necessarily because of like it's not that Detective Pikachu failed, it's just that Detective Pikachu came out in 2019, and while they were developing these projects, a pandemic hit. And that might have pushed things back. And if there's one thing about the Pokemon Company that we can kind of tell at this point is that they set forth a media plan, you know, a cross media plan, and they stick to it. It's stuff with like, you look at some of the quote unquote problems with Sword and Shield, how it didn't have the full Pokedex in it. That game wasn't moving. Once they give a release date for something, there's usually card games and TV shows and all this other cross-media stuff working together. That's why, like, when they actually gave Pokemon Legends the January release date, and even when they said early 2021 or whatever, the winter 2020, I forget what they said exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it was like winter 22. Doesn't matter. It's got a release date for January. It has that. That game's coming out. Come hell or high water, it's coming out on that date. I can't think of the last time that the Pokemon Company has announced a release date and moved it. I can't even think of the last time they really announced a window and moved it that dramatically. Like, when they announced Detective Pikachu, they just said they were working on it. They didn't say when.
Yeah, just to confirm, that was May 28th, 2019 was when that was announced.
Right. That was like a month or two after the movie.
Yeah.
Because the movie was April, I think.
Yeah, which may have been, I mean, they may have announced it to just capitalize on like the initial success of the movie.
Yeah, and it could be a way to gauge some of the response too. But I think that some of that, like, if there was any idea of tying the Switch release of Detective Pikachu or Detective Pikachu 2, because I think, wasn't it also like supposed to be like a compilation? I don't know if it was it a straight sequel always, or was it always just another Detective Pikachu project?
I will read you the entirety of our news article, which I believe contains all of the known information we have for this game. The sequel of the 2018 3DS game was announced for Switch tonight at the Pokemon Company's strategy meeting. No release date was given, but the game will feature, quote, different ending than the recent Hollywood movie.
Okay.
I think that's it. I think that's all we know.
All right. I forgot that wasn't even out of Pokemon Presents. It was just at a... that was totally like, hey, Detective Pikachu's an important property.
It feels like they like needed to tell their investors that, we see that movie and we're still doing that.
So maybe we'll hear about it in the next year or so, because I think after Legends, like, is next fall, is 2022, holiday 2022, is that going to be a new gen? Like, I don't think so, but maybe.
I don't know. I'm unclear on if Legends counts as a mainline RPG or not.
I mean, Game Freak is making it. So they are the main, I mean, not that, like, I think they've worked on some of the spinoff stuff too, but like that seems to, because some of the issues that people are decrying for Blood Diamond and Shitty Pearl it's developed by this company Ilka that I'm looking forward to the game, so I don't want to drag it at all. Like, some of the fact that, like, it looks like a pretty straightforward port remake, what have you, is it's outsourced in a more public way than, for example, Pokemon Let's Go was outsourced, because that game was totally partially outsourced as well. A lot of the mainline Pokemon games, especially as they increase in complexity, there are other parties at hand working on them. It's just that, like, the Pokemon company was very clear that this company Ilka was working on Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, whereas Game Freak was working on Pokemon Legends. I'm like fascinated by how Pokemon Legends is going to be, because that game looks like it could be really cool. It also looks like it could be like Pokemon XD levels of meh.
But it's the first Pokemon game that's come out in a very long time that I'm legitimately, like, even if it isn't fantastic, I'm still very interested in trying it.
Yeah, like, it's just fascinating.
It feels like they're like doing something legitimately new, which Pokemon is always like. Pokemon is a slow moving franchise in terms of modernization.
Yeah.
I've said it before, but it took them a very long time to let you run diagonally, which was something that most other video games had kind of mastered by like late Super Nintendo era. But Pokemon didn't get to until like, I think, the 3DS.
Yeah. Was it X and Y? I think where
I believe first, so.
You had to get like roller skates to be able to run diagonally.
Yeah. Yeah. You need like special items. Right. So yeah, it's like, The Pokemon franchise just doesn't move. And so seeing something like Legends where it's like, holy crap, that looks like a legitimate, like, different base mechanic is extremely interesting to me. And it seems to take some of the things I liked from Let's Go, which is the best Pokemon game. So
I actually did play some Let's Go a couple weeks ago, and I don't fundamentally disagree with what you're talking about, but I will say that Let's Go just reminds me how limited the type pool is for Gen 1.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so Let's Go has the same problem as Samus Returns in that it's brilliant reimagining of this game that's hampered only by the original game.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's killing my childhood a little bit, but you're not wrong.
I grew up with Red and Blue too. Like, I have tons of nostalgia for those.
We didn't know anything better than that. We just knew,
right,
like,
and
okay,
it was fine at the time.
Yeah, there were certain characters, like Psychic was super overpowered. Like,
yeah. Let's Go just does so much. I mean, even on like the most basic level of, like, you know, as opposed to trainer battles and wild battles being the exact same mechanic, what if trainer battles and catching Pokemon wasn't the same thing? Like, oh, wow, that adds a lot of variety and makes the game way less repetitive and like more fun. And it's great. I really hope they do more Let's Go games someday.
I'll be curious what happens, because like, are you now going to have three lines of like the Diamond and Pearl remake that they have? Or are they going to have Let's Go Johto at some point? Like, which honestly, I'd be pretty cool with that. That sounds great.
I'd be down. I have like no memory of Gold and Silver, so that would feel like a pretty new game to me.
Yeah.
So I'd be very excited for that.
I'm excited for Diamond and Pearl. I did that preview, which was just watching a demo for a half an hour. But like, that was a game I spent a lot of time with. It came out around the Mario Party 8 college years. I did not have a drinking game around Diamond and Pearl. I played it largely by myself and traded with some people in my dorm. It's my experience with Diamond and Pearl at the age of 20. Yeah, so I don't think Detective Pikachu was canceled. I think he shouldn't have said the things that he did, but now.
I do think that Detective Pikachu may not have been in development when it was announced.
Or it might have just started development. So, yeah,
that may have been somebody walked into a boardroom and just went like, of course we're making one for the Switch. And like, then we're like, we need to find somebody to do this.
So there was positive buzz about the movie and was like, ah, crap, I lost that bet. So, yeah, I mean, we'll probably hear about it next year, I would think. But also, if the pandemic affected it at all, maybe it's a little farther out. It is weird. We don't really know of any Pokemon games outside of like Pokemon Sleep past Legends.
Yeah, but I feel like between BDSM and Legends, like,
yeah, oh, there's more than enough.
That's a lot of Pokemon in the next few months.
And yeah, and so then we'll probably get a Pokemon Presents maybe in February, or I think what they do them, I feel like, anywhere from like the beginning of the year to May or June. Sometimes you get two. But we'll probably get some kind of update that will be like, here's the Pokemon stuff for this year.
They could do a DLC for if Legends is like their mainline game.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, they've kind of stopped doing the third version of the game. Then, yeah, just do a bunch of Legends DLC. Keep Legends to be one game that you just add stuff to. I feel like they've realized that maybe that's the modern way of doing Pokemon and not the releasing three different games for each generation. But we'll see.
All right, so let's go on to the main event, which, John, you've been playing Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, a game that came out in 2003. Actually, I didn't realize it's literally 18 years to the day.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Whoa, did they do that on purpose?
I hope so. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic came out on Xbox on November 11th, 2003. It is coming to Switch, its first release on a Nintendo platform, on November 11th, 2021. John, you have reviewed the game. You were someone who came into this, I guess, like, I mean, you are a fan of Star Wars. We have had multiple episodes all about Star Wars on this thing. But you're not, I guess you're not the biggest RPG guy. So how did you come out of KOTOR? On this playthrough and this review?
Pretty positively. I have tried to play this game so many times because it's such a well-regarded game, and it's set so far before anything else in the Star Wars universe that despite technically being Legends now and no longer canon, it's still kind of like accepted canon because there's just nothing to contradict it because it's so just way outside. And there's some references to it in other like canon Star Wars stuff. I didn't have an Xbox when this came out, and my PC definitely couldn't run it. But years ago, I bought both this and the second one. I think it was in some sort of Star Wars bundle on Steam. And I tried it multiple times and just could never get into it. I don't like the way it controls on PC. But the Switch version is the first time I'm playing it where it's clicked, and I'm actually, you know, playing all the way through it. And you can definitely tell it's from 2003. There's a lot of aging game mechanics and level design. But overall, I think I get it. And I especially get from the context of 2003, like looking at this game from when it came out, why it would have the legacy that it does. Because while I think the combat and level design doesn't hold up super well, the actual like story and branching paths and like dialogue trees and all of that, the stuff that you think of as like BioWare staples that you find in Mass Effect and stuff like that, they still hold up so well.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about the game as well. It's been a while since I've done a full playthrough. I think I've only finished it once, and it was back on Xbox in like 2004 or 5 or something. But I played the first couple hours a handful of time. I think the most recent time was on my computer shortly after The Force Awakens came out, because it was just Star Wars hungry.
Yeah.
And wound up playing a couple hours of it. And yeah, like the combat's very like herky jerky and janky, but the overall presentation and the way it handles the Star Wars of it all, like, still works really well. And I feel like, you know, I'll give the spoiler, but I'll dance around it. Even though, you know, it's almost a 20-year-old game, I think the big twist that happens in KOTOR is mm-hmm. kind of well-worn territory at this point. But it's the first time on a Nintendo platform, so I won't say it directly. Yeah. But the way it handles that, the way the storytelling works, it's excellent video game storytelling. And I highly recommend for anyone who's played the game, because the plot would be ruined if you were to read this book. There is a boss fights book about KOTOR that is very good. You know, kind of talks about how BioWare got the license, you know, how like the struggles of making that game and how it came out so strong. It's been a while since I read it, but I just remember being like, oh man, like KOTOR, what a great game. What a trendsetter, that KOTOR.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see, because of course, Aspyr, the company that's just, they're the THQ of Star Wars games, that's just been pumping these kind of HD ports onto Switch and PS4, and not Xbox, because they can all play in backwards compatibility and usually run better than Aspyr's remasters. But they've just been pumping these out, and they announced a actual remake of Knights of the Old Republic for PS5. And I think PC. And I'm curious how faithful they'll stay in terms of mechanics to the original. Like, I don't know in a modern lens if the like combat and stuff from this game would really be viewed positively when you don't have that shell of, oh, this is a game from 2003. If you package that content as a game from 2021 or 2022 or whenever that's coming out, I'm not sure how people react to it.
Does the remake is the remake not a turn-based RPG? Like, that's, I mean, honestly, if yeah. I were looking at the market of a KOTOR remake in 2021 or 2023 or whenever it comes out, I would 100% go the Final Fantasy VII remake route with it. And
but I don't know.
Well, not the Final Fantasy VII remake as terms of story, but as far
sure,
as like
but
how
as far, yeah.
It took something that was like a pretty traditional turn-based RPG of its era, you know, KOTOR being Western as opposed to Final Fantasy VII being like the definitive Japanese RPG in some respects. Mm-hmm. And just being like, okay, so if you want to play the turn-based version, like it's there on every console except for PlayStation, humorously. But if you want to play like the Mass Effect 3 action version, here it is.
Yeah, and
the fact that you don't have BioWare making it would give me pause with that, because I don't know if Asper...
And I don't know that it's... Because I believe Aspyr is doing it internally.
Yeah.
And I've always got the impression that they're a pretty small gang. So I don't know... I'm surprised they're pitching it as a remake at all. I just don't know that they have the bandwidth to like totally change it. Like, I think my ideal would be to... Because the combat mechanics in Knights of the Old Republic feel like, you know, proto Xenoblade, because they have kind of that MMO element to them of like click on an enemy, you'll auto attack, and then you choose special attacks. But just way more clunky. And so I feel like if you were going to modernize it, that's what I would do. I would stay in that same vein. I wouldn't turn it into a third person shooter, but you could modernize within that same line of thinking. But I just can't imagine them actually successfully doing that. But I wonder if they kind of need to.
Well, they can take their time with that and give us KOTOR 2 on Switch. Because that is a game that I have never finished, and I would like to.
That's my other question now, is I have to decide whether to wait for that to happen, or if I need to just play the version of it I already own on PC, or if I need to go buy an Xbox copy. Because I really prefer playing this on a controller.
Well, you have the Series X. It's backwards compatible. I have it on my Xbox.
That's what I'm thinking. Get the original Xbox version.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking here about like, oh, bring KOTOR 2 to Switch. I'm like, or I could just play the copy that I got. I've seen it go on sale. Like, that's where I bought KOTOR 1 and 2 for Xbox, but they were on sale. I want to say $5 or less.
Yeah.
But yeah, KOTOR 2 is one that I've played a little bit of, but never got all the way through. I believe it's the typical Obsidian sequel where it does a lot of cool things and then they like ran out of money. And I think it's one of those games where they're like, well, we were going to have this part of the game, but it wound up just being several paragraphs of describing what would have happened here.
Yeah.
The Xenogears of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. We ran out of money on disc 2.
Yeah.
And so it kind of just falls apart there. But
yeah, we got, don't worry. We got Mitsuda to do the music and it's really cool. But just pretend you're seeing the cool mix and doing the cool stuff.
That's something else I'll say for Knights of the Old Republic. The soundtrack's really good. It's Jeremy Soule, who I believe is canceled at this point.
Yeah.
But in terms of off-brand John Williams music, really well done. Especially for, like, it sounds very, like, orchestral and not all synthy, which is, 2003 was right around the turning point where that wasn't super common yet to have music of that quality in the games.
Yeah, I mean, it goes without saying, Jeremy Soule, by a lot of accounts, a deplorable human being. His music is very good.
Yeah.
if you're the kind of person that can separate the art from the artist, enjoy his songs.
Yes.
But, oh my God, yeah, I read some of the things about it. It's not good.
Oh yeah, yeah, we do not stand Jeremy Soule as a person.
Music's real good, though.
He's weirdly like a, because he also did the Harry Potter, speaking of canceled things, he also did the Harry Potter video game soundtracks. So he's like a professional John Williams impersonator from that era. That's like before he was like now, like he also did, you know, like Skyrim and other like very iconic music. But in my head, he will always just be off-brand John Williams for video games.
The Harry Potter games also had pretty good music from what I remember as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so check out John's review. It'll be up by the time you hear this.
Yeah, it'll be up tomorrow. Yeah, Thursday.
And I know, and we probably won't talk about this that much, but I think it's also just notable that Grand Theft Auto 3, Vice City, and San Andreas are all coming to Nintendo Switch, which it seems wild because, in all honesty, to a certain degree, the GameCube's failure is because the GameCube didn't have Grand Theft Auto 3. Like, that's a very reductive way of looking at it. There are a lot of other reasons why that system didn't work.
It is kind
of
true, though.
Yeah. And it also didn't have Halo. Like there's a couple other things there, too.
Yeah. But Grand Theft Auto was everywhere else.
Yeah. Because it even came to Xbox in this time period as well.
PS2, yeah.
Yeah, 2003. That's when it came out in a double pack with 3 and Vice City. It came out on Xbox, came out on PC. It was everywhere but GameCube. So we figured with 2003 kind of being well represented on Nintendo Switch this week, we'd talk about 2003. So join us as we go back in time to 2003. It's 18 years ago. George W. Bush is in office. I don't know. The Yankees lost to the Marlins in the World Series. I can't think of any other notable events. But the GBA SP came out in February. But yeah, so the beginning of this was an era where the GameCube pretty much at this point failed. Looking at some of this, I focused more in like kind of reading about this for the back half of the year, kind of I guess like the, you know, the last 4 months. And it's the 6 month earning reports for Nintendo. They posted a loss, which was definitely a thing that never hadn't happened in a long time. And this, because this is when Nintendo had Metroid, they had Mario, they had a lot of games on GameCube from 2001 to the beginning of 2003. To the beginning of 2003 is when Wind Waker came out, and that did not work. They dropped the system's price to $99 less than 2 years after it came out. Considering the Switch in its fifth year got its first price drop sort of like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like that's wild to think.
It's weird how despite having F-Zero and Paper Mario and Metroid and Star Fox, it somehow didn't save the system.
Yeah. then some other things that, like, yeah, Game Boy was still doing all right. As I mentioned before, Game Boy Advance SP came out in February. Weirdly enough, so the Game Boy and the Game Boy Color stopped production in March of 2003, which, like, that seems pretty reasonable. Like yes. That's a long tail, but the Game Boy lasted for a long, long time. Here's the wild thing. The original Nintendo and the Super Nintendo stopped production in 2003.
Feels like they had a factory going somewhere that they just forgot to call, that had just been quietly pumping out NESs the entire time.
And this is also when there was chatter about the next-gen console, which, once again, is kind of funny that 2 years after the GameCube came out, there was chatter about next-gen consoles, whereas for the Switch, we are 5 years into it, and Nintendo's like, we're halfway through the cycle, and they probably aren't lying.
Yeah, especially since they could very well still have a substantial revision in their back pocket.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they could easily extend this thing.
But some other notable things, Enix and Square merged. And one aspect of this that I feel like people always kind of forget is Square did not consume Enix. It was actually the other way around. Like, Enix absorbed Square, and that's how Square Enix was born. And that was, you know, went down the path of Crystal Chronicles, that would come out in early 2004, and Final Fantasy Tactics Advance came out in September of 2003. You know, Square came back to Nintendo platforms, which that's another one where we probably could have done this concept for an episode a couple years ago when all the Final Fantasy games came out on Switch, because that's another series that was gone for a very long time, and now, like, everything except for the MMOs is accessible on Switch.
Yeah, they've made the long journey back. Especially for Final Fantasy VII, which I believe started as an N64 game.
Yeah, I guess technically. I think it was always just a prototype, and then they moved to PlayStation. Oh, sure.
Yeah, I just mean the like, I don't know if that specific version of the game, but the idea of the seventh Final Fantasy being a Nintendo 64 game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the plan at one point.
Nintendo bought stock in Bandai this year, which I did not go and investigate the entire through line, but I think this is kind of how we get on the journey to Nintendo owning Monolith, because Nintendo bought stock in Bandai, and I think that kind of led to the partnership that birthed Byte & Kaitos and Byte & Kaitos Origins. And then that was around the time when Nintendo, I think, bought stock in Monolith, because I think there was a while where I think Nintendo and Bandai Namco each owned 50% of Monolith. And then I think around Disaster Day of Crisis was when Nintendo bought Bandai out.
They were like, this is so good.
Yeah.
We need this all to ourselves.
And also, another bit of news from the summer of 2003 that seems relevant now. This is when Masahiro Sakurai left HAL and wasn't going to work on Nintendo games anymore.
He almost made it. There's an alternate history where that guy just goes off and just makes tons of, like, totally original games. He never makes a sequel to anything.
Yeah.
And it's just very prolific. Yeah,
no Smash Brothers ever again. But it's weird to think that, like, here we are after Ultimate, after literally four other Smash Brothers game, all this DLC, years of development, hours upon hours upon hours of time that Sakurai spent on Smash Brothers. And, like, he tried to get out. And just looking at some of the chatter from the era is funny, because people are like, oh, what's going to happen to Smash Brothers now? And it's like, buddies, if you only knew.
It's funny because it... We're going to look back at now and have a similar thought, because I feel like there's a lot of that same kind of talk around Smash Bros. Right now. It feels like the first time where, like, we're, you know, because after Brawl and after Smash 4 and in its various forms, we were always like, okay, next one. This feels like the first time in a long time where people are they going to do another one? Is Sakurai going to do it? Are they going to, like, reboot it? Like, what do they do after this? And it could be that, you know, and whenever the next Nintendo system comes out, they totally just have the entire lineup of Ultimate again and then add two new characters. And we'll all be laughing at each other now for wondering what they were going to do.
Yeah.
But the comments on our news article for this really feel like they're echoing sentiments that I'm hearing a lot right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more news that happened. There was a shitty E3 that happened in 2003, the Pac-Man versus year. Which Pac-Man Versus is a totally fine game. It's just, like, that's not an E3 headliner.
I want an entire press conference dedicated to it. Please and thank you.
But let's talk about the games that came out in, you know, the late summer through the holiday of 2003. And what better place to start than the last good F-Zero game?
The best F-Zero game.
Yeah, F-Zero GI. F-Zero X is really good.
Yeah, I'm a GX man myself.
I think there's something to be said with the fact that the story mode in GX is like effing impossible.
Yes. But it's also like great.
Yeah. No, it is
great. There's some games where they're difficult and then you finally beat a level and you just feel nothing. But in F-Zero GX, when you beat that difficult level and you see the next cutscene, you were like, that was 100% worth the last 3 days I spent playing this level over and over again. In fact, I think I got a bargain.
But that is a damn good game, and it's legitimately a shame that that's been languishing on GameCube for 18 years.
Yeah, I would love to just remaster it. It looks great in HD. Should if you ever have a waking dream about playing F-Zero GX in HD, looks incredible.
Another game that I kind of, because this is, I'm surprised that Soul Calibur hasn't found its way onto Switch. Soul Calibur 2 came out in August 2003. That was the one with Link in it on GameCube, and the GameCube version sold like stupid well because they put your boy in it.
I don't know what caused them, because Soul Calibur 3 was PlayStation 2 exclusive. It didn't come out on Xbox either. And I don't know if that was a brand deal, or I remember the story at the time just being like they wanted to focus on one version. But it could have been that Sony paid for it or something.
Yeah, I think there was like a crappy Wii game that came like Soul Calibur Legends. Like. Legends, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a motion controlled third person hack and slash. I played through like the first two stages of that, and my God, is it boring. I should finish that one day.
It was terrible. I should go back to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I bought it.
Yeah.
I like Soul Calibur. So
I miss Soul Calibur, but like I played 2 and 4 a lot. 4 had Vader and Yoda. That was awesome.
I was just gonna ask if that was the Star Wars one. Yeah. I played a little bit of the newest one that has
six
Geralt maybe? From Witcher. And it seems good. Soul Calibur is good. Bring him back to Switch, put Link back in. But like maybe take away his ranged attacks, because hey, guess what? Nobody else in Soul Calibur has ranged attacks, and that's freaking cheap.
It's BS. He's such a
garbage, unbalanced character. He's the character your little brother uses just to annoy you.
So I want to talk about one game that I don't know if you ever played it, but it was one that is honestly the best Grand Theft Auto game I've ever played. It's Simpsons Hit and Run. That game rules. That is one that I would love to see back on Switch.
Wonder who owns that.
Oh, I mean, probably Disney.
Oh, yeah. Give it to Aspyr then.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it feels like a THQ Nordic style re-release.
I did like that era where they just made Simpsons. Oh, that was Radical Entertainment that did that. I think they shut down, right? Okay. They were bought by Activision, and then after Prototype 2, they lost all personality, and most people were laid off. Some people were absorbed into other Activision projects.
I was going to say, do they make Call of Duty games now? Probably. Is the fate of all Activision-owned studios?
The last thing that they are credited on is supporting Destiny.
Okay, well, it's not, you know, that long ago.
Oh, man, apparently they worked on a Simpsons Hit and Run 2. Oh, damn it. What a bummer.
This is why you stay off Wikipedia.
Yeah.
You learn too much.
Simpsons Hit and Run, fantastic game. It was that era where the Simpsons license was like, wait, Crazy Taxi is popular. Go make one of those. Just make one of those. And they were all good.
It was a magical time for licensed games. Like, we were kind of like starting to get good at making 3D games, but also they weren't prohibitively expensive to make yet.
Yeah.
So you could make weird stuff. And there were still plenty of them that were terrible, but there was a lot of stuff that was like pretty good. Like all the like weird Lord of the Rings games.
Yeah. I still remember there's that Lord of the Rings RPG.
Third Age. Yeah.
Legitimately very good.
Yeah. Yeah. The hack and slash Lord of the Rings games were good too.
Yeah.
The freaking Peter Jackson's King Kong video game is like incredible.
Very interesting. I don't know if I'll say it's good, but it's very interesting.
I thought it was great. But yeah, just that whole era of of licensed games was fascinating. Because, like, if I buy a licensed game now, I'm buying it assuming it's bad. And I feel like that wasn't 100% the case in, like, the mid to early 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, even if you think about, like, the early to mid-90s, it was really that early 3D era where it got a little dicey.
Yeah, there was some good stuff on, like, SNES, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, like, the Disney properties where, like, you know, Capcom was making them. Yep. Before Virgin
Goof Troop
got their hands on them. Yeah.
But other games from this kind of smattering of games from 2003. Beautiful Joe. Every now and then there's a rumor that, like, Kamiya wants to bring it back, and maybe he visited Capcom, and who knows?
I feel like now and then everybody just asks Kamiya, just like, hey, would you make this game? And he's like, yeah, I'd get paid to make that game. And everyone's like, Kamiya wants to make Star Fox. Like, it's that, yeah, like, that happens.
He wants to make Okami too. Well, like, and no, like, shit.
And it's like, yeah, Kamiya would like a paycheck. And if you offer to let him make a game, he'll go, sure. Like,
yeah.
It is his job, after all.
Man, Beautiful Joe's a fantastic game. It is. That's another one. You know, like F-Zero GX, I'll like Soul Calibur 2, like Simpsons Hit and Run. Damn shame that these games are kind of trapped on platforms that aren't really that accessible.
Yeah, and the GameCube's getting extremely expensive, too.
Yeah. At least, like, in Beautiful Joe's case, and, Soul Calibur 2, the best version, is on GameCube. Beautiful Joe's case, it is on PlayStation 2, and that's still attainable.
Simpsons Hit and Run, I think, is on everything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's on Game Boy. That might be one of those weirdly ambitious Game Boy Advance games, actually.
Yeah, that's, like, there's one game on this list that I mentioned to you, and you were like, oh, yeah, that one. Star Wars Flight of the Falcon, which came out on the same day as Knights of the Old Republic. Okay, maybe I had the date wrong with Knights of the Old Republic. I don't know. Whatever. It's almost 18 years to the day.
Yeah. But so we're actually celebrating the anniversary of Flight of the Falcon, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah, like, that game. So you never played
this? It's a Game Boy Advance game. That is.
Did you ever play it?
No.
Okay.
I didn't know this game existed until today.
So what it feels like is THQ got the Star Wars license for GBA. It's a THQ game, of course. And was like, all right, we want to try to bring, like, the Rogue Squadron, like, especially, like, Rogue Squadron 2 and 3 vibes to a Game Boy Advance game. So we're going to make a fully 3D game, but to rein it in, we'll have it be rail line. So they tried to make a Star Wars Star Fox game, which should be incredible. It sucks so bad. But it has like that exact, like, the Rogue Squadron thing of like you start it up and it goes to that briefing room on board, like, the Mon Calamari ships. And, like, you have the little hologram screen of each level that you can scroll through, just like Rogue Squadron, and different, like, the first one, you're the Millennium Falcon, as you would expect, flying toward the Death Star to do, like, Death Star things or something. I don't remember. But then, like, later ones, you're, like, on a speeder bike on Tatooine, and, like, they give you, like, different vehicles and give you kind of, like, different context to do kind of the same thing. And it's all very technically impressive. Doesn't run super well. But, yeah, it like, has all the pieces to be really good, and just fails miserably. And you can get it for like $3, and it's a weird, interesting game to try.
Maybe I'll get it for when my Analog Pocket shows up some year.
There you go.
Any games from this list that you want to call out?
In Star Wars mode, Jedi Knight Jedi Academy came out in September, which is just like, what a smattering of Star Wars games.
You got Eternal Classic, Flight of the Falcon.
Yeah, but I mean, like, between just, even if we take, you know, the best one, Flight of the Falcon, out of the list, you still have KOTOR and Jedi Academy are like two of the more highly regarded Star Wars games, and they came out like right next to each other.
Yeah. It really, like, this was a good era because it was when, I mean, really, we're still, I think Rebel Strike might have came out around this time too.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been a little bit earlier. Rebel Strike was,
might have been early 2003.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But even still, like, it was, because it was the hype from the re-releases and the prequels, and yeah, it was kind of like, a peak that we didn't really see with the sequel trilogy, which is unfortunate, at least as far as video games go, which I think there's something to be said about stratified market, cost of games, stuff like that. Even the way that I think Disney distributed the license, where it was kind of just to EA on consoles, really limited the scope of what could happen.
Yeah, EA makes the new games, Aspyr ports the old games, and Lego perpetually develops one game and never releases it.
Yeah, but now Ubisoft is working on a Star Wars game.
Yes, I forgot about that.
Maybe the future will be a little brighter.
In all fairness, for every, you know, KOTOR and Jedi Academy and Republic Commando, there is also the Obi-Wan game and like the totally okay but not great Star Wars Bounty Hunter game and Bombad Racing.
They should bring Bounty Hunter to Switch. I'm surprised they haven't.
I think they just have a list and they're just on shuffle. I will give them credit for KOTOR. They use the Xbox version as a base and not the PC version, which means that it runs and looks a whole lot better than Republic Commando. Because rather than like having to strip out weird things from a PC game that don't work on modern platforms, they can just emulate an Xbox game really, really, really well. and it works a lot better. So good for them on figuring that out for their Switch releases.
I have two more games I kind of want to call out. I saw that Tony Hawk's Underground.
Yes.
Open world game that unfortunately abbreviates to Thug.
I think that's entirely intentional.
That aged poorly. the game is still very good. Some goofy voice acting and story beats aside, like I played some of that when basking in Tony Hawk glory before Activision turned heel. But Tony Hawk's Underground, like, still really good. And it is a little bit in the same way of, you know, Knights of the Old Republic maybe being like an early open world game. Like, it doesn't get all of that right, but it does just open up the scope of those games so much and does some things. Some things work, some things don't, but it's kind of a shame that we didn't see the good end to that type of open world Tony Hawk game being explored. Because I think it just got to the point where it got driven into the ground. And I'll be honest, I haven't even played like some of the final ones from like the late 2000s. Like, I didn't really play Proving Ground that much or Project 8.
Last one I played before the remake was the DS one, I think. The American Skate Land.
American Skate Land's awesome.
It was great. And I kind of was like, let's leave it on a good note.
Yeah, no, that game is phenomenal.
Tony Hawk Underground, that was kind of mind-blowing when it came out. Because you went from like the numbered Tony Hawk Pro Skater games, which were so like arcadey, to this one, which was like, it had a plot. You like made a character at the beginning.
I love the shitbag friend.
Yeah, Eric, yeah, like there were characters and story arcs.
Some famous skateboarders showed up woodenly acting, which is just charming.
I'm pretty sure Bam Margera was there like way too much.
Yeah,
way more than Bam should ever be anywhere.
I'd never play Thug 2 then.
He's like on the cover in doofy PS2 graphics. Tony Hawk Underground came out like right at the end of when I was like super into skateboarding and stuff as a kid. So like I played that one, had a great time, and then just kind of fell off, which was probably the ideal time to fall off, it seems.
I mean, I think this is the end of the peak. Like, I would say there's definitely a rising action to, you know, Tony Hawk 1 to 2 to 3. I think people think 4 is the best one. For me, I think 3, because 3 is the perfect distillation of the 2-minute runs. 4 is when they went like there wasn't a story, but like the levels were untimed and kind of like open world, go find quests, which is good. And 4 is phenomenal. And I think then Tony Hawk's Underground kind of took it to the next level. And then from there, it was just slowly downhill.
Yeah, I should replay those.
American Wasteland, and the non-DS version of Skateland. That was a pretty good one. But yeah, then a lot of the stuff after that is when it started falling off a cliff. We can always just turn this into a Tony Hawk game club, as I have no shortage of GameCube Tony Hawk games.
Are we allowed to play Activision games again yet?
Or can we play them
as long as they're from before? How far back do the allegations go? When's the cutoff point?
If you buy them used, it's fine. They don't get any money.
What if I've had them since they came out?
I think I have multiple copies of some of the GameCube Tony Hawk games. I believe I have every Tony Hawk game on GameCube. I think. I know I have American Wasteland. I might not have Underground 2.
Yeah, I definitely don't have Underground 2. I think I have all the numbered ones, but it's definitely across. Like, I have one on Dreamcast and two on N64, and 3 and 4, I think, are both on GameCube. One of them might be on PS2, though.
I have Tony Hawk 3 on Nintendo 64, and it is as terrible as you could ever imagine.
I realized the other day at work, I saw a copy of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4 on PS1, which I did not realize that happened.
Yeah.
And it was sealed, so it was like $150. So, but otherwise, I probably would have just got it out of sheer curiosity.
Yeah, I haven't really tried 4 on PlayStation 1, but I think that one is also like ridiculous in how they make a game that is technologically not for that somehow work barely. Like, it was a white whale for me back when, like, I went to like game conventions where you could like buy used games. That would be like if I ever see a copy of Tony Hawk 3, because I don't, at least at the time, it was probably like $15 or something like that. But sure. I was like, I just want to have this. It's also, I think, like the last third party, maybe even just the last N64 game, because it came out like 2002.
Late. Yeah. Yeah. It's an extremely late, because
it did not come out alongside Tony Hawk 3's launch. It was like, you know, those were all usually holiday games. And I think the N64 one was like spring after 3 came out.
Yeah, I've never played that one, but I watched, once I knew it existed by talking to you, I watched footage of it, and that is
it's terrible.
Just a fascinating thing.
I'll knock out my things that I think are worth pointing out, which is Fire Emblem debuted on Game Boy Advance in 2003. Yes. Just like KOTOR, they should bring that back, right? No, there's no Fire Emblem anymore, right? Real talk, though, like, I mean, Three Houses came out like 3 years ago. There's probably going to be another Fire Emblem.
You're supposed to play through one house per year. Calm down, speedrunners. Jesus.
Well, probably, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear about a new Fire Emblem sometime next year. Although, maybe they'll be like, Zelda got delayed, but don't worry, here's the sequel to Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Do we know what Intelligent Systems has been doing? What are they? They did Paper Mario, right?
Yeah, but I think those teams are different for Fire Emblem.
Okay.
I'll be curious to see what happens with Fire Emblem, because, like, is Koei Tecmo going to hang around? Like, Three Houses was real good.
Yeah. Does Intelligent Systems want to continue with what Three Houses was doing, or do they have their own view of where that series should go?
I mean, it's much like Detective Pikachu. Who knows?
Yeah.
And the last two things I want to mention, Kirby Air Ride, which was, I do love how Sakurai left HAL and then his last game came out 2 months later.
If ever there was a drop the mic game, I think it's like you make Kirby Air Ride, you drop the mic, you leave Nintendo.
And like Kirby Air Ride's real good, like very extremely underrated. And the game that I kind of want to mention alongside of it is that, so Kirby Air Ride came out, at least in America, in October of 2003. Mario Kart Double Dash came out a month later.
That was a choice.
It's like, all right, we're gonna have this kind of weird entry, you know, open world Pokemon game and Pokemon Legends or whatever, like the next month you're just like, and here's Xenoblade 3. Like, Kirby Air Ride's really cool though. Like, just it's that Sakurai design philosophy that I've always appreciated, of you look at the genre and then you break it down to its basic elements and then kind of put it back together. And that's why you automatically go in Kirby Air Ride, because you're always pressing on the gas in a racing game anyway. Might not just have your hands available to do other things.
Yeah, it's sort of, I mean, it's almost a lot of the philosophy that affected like Wii games, but done probably better than most of those were done.
Yeah.
Yeah, few people get it on the level that Sakurai does.
And the city trial mode is incredible.
Yeah, and a lot of the mechanics from Air Ride, I think, looped back around into the, especially Smash 4.
Yeah.
If I remember right.
Yep.
We should throw out Legend of Zelda Collector's Edition.
So that was like, I think that came with GameCubes and like pre-orders at the time.
Yes. Yeah, it was a bundle game. The only time I've seen a bundle game that has a warning to tell you that most games on the system you just bought won't run this bad. Which is a bold move. And this remains, and I suspect it will remain even after Majora's Mask comes to NSO, the definitive worst way to ever play Majora's Mask. And a passable way to play Ocarina of Time.
So here's how you could have gotten it, at least in North America. It was bundled with the GameCube, but you can also obtain it by subscribing or renewing a subscription to Nintendo Power, or by registering a GameCube in two or more of these four games: Double Dash, Mario Party 5, Superstar Saga, and 1080 Avalanche.
That reminds me of, didn't they do a thing with the Wii U where if you had a certain, like some certain games, you then got a free game?
Yeah, was that WarioWare Touched or?
No, it can't have been that because I didn't have that. Was it like Wind Waker or something? There was some Wii U game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was
where Wind Waker. Registered it and then you got another. Yeah. And it was great, except that I already like owned them all because there were only 10 Wii U games and I was a Nintendo fan. So I was buying them as they came out. So I think I got Wii Party U that way because that was the only game on the list I didn't have.
That game rules.
It is. It's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I miss those days. That what a great. I bought Tokyo Mirage Sessions. That's how desperate I was for video games. I was buying turn-based JRPGs.
It's just funny reflecting on, like, especially the Wii U era, because it was just so barren. And now on Switch, yeah. I'm basically just, like, underwater every day for the past 3 years of, like, oh, crap, this 15... Oh, they just had another event, and they shadow-dropped 5 games. Oh, crap.
There are first-party Nintendo games that I'm not buying on Switch because I have other things to play. Whereas on Wii U, I was, like... I'm like, oh, obscure third party. I'm like, Deus Ex. I don't like Deus Ex, but I'll play that.
Yeah, what else am I going to do?
Yeah, it's
also like, I mean, I loved Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. I booted up the game. That's like as far as I got with the DLC.
I still haven't. Well, I need now. Okay. Getting clear of KOTOR. Maybe I can finally do that.
The support group for playing the DLC of a game that we both really liked.
Yeah, we can start a really late Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity DLC game club.
I was also cleaning up because that was a weird thing where, you know, inside baseball, we staff accounted that game for review purposes. So I like finished that game and then started a new one on my own profile. So I was actually, when I went back and played it, I didn't even touch the DLC because I was still cleaning up some stuff from my second playthrough. It's still a very good Warriors game.
It might be the best Warriors game.
Yeah. I just...
Despite like running terribly.
Yeah. I just like the flow of that game a lot. The way despite the fact that like a lot of the characters look like they should be similar, there's really a lot of good variety.
Mm-hmm.
And also just the way that they kind of balance between like the longer meteor missions and the kind of addictive loop of like, all right, I'm going to build up these characters. That means I'll do a run on this mission to get these items. And like it's all cohesive with each other. And I rarely get bored when I play that game, despite the fact that there is so much repetition.
There's lots of repetition, but they also do a great job of like, it shows that the actual Zelda story team, whatever that means, worked on that game, because there's so much just like awareness for what happened in Breath of the Wild, even though it's kind of like a parallel timeline story. There's so many moments in that game where I'd be playing and realize like, oh, we're going to this place where this battle would have had to happen, and like, oh crap, okay, that battle's happening now, and that's how that hole got in the wall. Like, they do a really good job of marrying it with the existing stuff. It's a great game. I should play the DLC. I loved that game.
I think that might be a show.
I think so, too. Unless you want to talk about Boktai.
Boktai, that's another game they should bring back.
Is that the one that was powered by the sun?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a copy of that game. I don't think it works.
I think it got expensive for a while. I don't know if it's still expensive.
Maybe I should just sell the copy and be like, I don't know if it works. You find out. Take a $50 flyer.
Untested, as is. Nobody's actually going to play it anyway. They just buy it to have it.
write us in if there's some, you know, end of 2003 game that you want to, that you're like, oh man, I want to see Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time actually get remade, or Beyond Good and Evil. Bring that out on a Switch. Feel free to write us in connectivity@nintendoreport.com, and we'll be back next week to talk about more video games. Bye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.
Game Boy Color. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here. I'm just okay. Listening to you like beautifully work your way through not knowing where you're going. And I didn't want to interrupt you.